call this meeting of the Arizona Board of Technical Registration Legislation and Rules Committee to order. May I have a roll call, please?
Yes. Leroy Brady. Jason Foos.
Here.
William Greenslade.
Here.
Robert Stanley. Edward Marley.
Here.
Peter Leeds.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Call to the public pursuant to ARS 38431.01 subparagraph H. The committee members are not allowed to discuss or take action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone here to speak on an item that's not related to the agenda items? And I see both of you have signed in. Thank you. And they'll both be talking about agenda item 5D. Adoption of minutes. Approve, modify, and or reject the February 20th, 2018 L&R committee minutes.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion we accept the minutes as written.
Right. Second.
We have a second. I have a couple of corrections that I would like to discuss. My name is misspelled in a couple places, so M-A-R-E-L-Y, so the L and E are transposed, but that's minor. The one other one is minutes item 5D, second paragraph. It says Mr. Marley stated that he knew of two design firms with in-house architects and both firms are registered with the boards. That should say two construction firms with in-house architects. We were talking about design build, and I just want to clarify that it was construction firms that have in-house architects that are registered with the board. Any other comments or corrections?
I have one correction on C, last paragraph. There's a reference to white page. That should be white paper. A minor typo.
Oh, yes.
And it seems like I did most of the speaking at the last meeting, which I don't remember. And
I was on the phone, so I don't know.
If I get that wordy at this meeting, please say something.
Oh, that's what we need, so you can discuss.
Any other questions? Hearing none, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. I think what I'd like to do, since we have some folks here to speak on item agenda item 5D, is let's move that up in the agenda if everyone's all right with that. Draft of substantive policy statement regarding public land surveying records repositories in Arizona. So
Chairman,
if you gentlemen...
We have a call-in.
Oh, we do?
For this.
Okay. Why don't we get them... Oh, there we go.
Yeah, actually, this gentleman's in the crowd. I'm not sure what item he's here for.
Oh,
he's here for item B and C.
B and C, okay. Then I am going to backtrack a little bit. Let's take items B and C first, because I'm hoping that those will be a little bit shorter. I have a sense that 5D might carry on for a bit. So if you want to come up and present, sir, that would be great.
Just to give you a little background, I met Mr. Wertle recently, and he had I was doing a presentation, and he had two questions that are good questions. Mr. Carlin and I have asked ourselves similar questions many times, because sometimes the law doesn't spell out what you need to know. I thought it would be a good opportunity for the board to talk about them and see if there's a way we can provide more clarity.
Great. And sir, if you could state your name for the record, please.
Sure. My name is Scott Wertle. I actually wasn't planning on speaking. Hopefully the email had enough context to it. But I think what I will do then is provide a couple anecdotes, if that's okay, to put it in the context of why I'm asking for it. These
sure.
That I've experienced and show you maybe where some of the confusion is. So in the first one about electronic seals, I had a story shared with me. This is not a personal account, so there's obviously a gap to this particular anecdote of where a friend, colleague of mine in another firm had recently hired somebody, whether it was an intern, recent grad, somebody like that. And so his first job was, here, take this stack of red lines and go incorporate these red lines. It's a pretty simple task. It's kind of grunt work he would give to an intern. And so he happily and dutifully did exactly that, including to the part where he noticed that his original electronic CAD file didn't have this little circle with a signature on it. So he took those prints, went over to the copy machine, scanned them, came back, cropped it all out, put it on that print, so that way he incorporated every single change that was on that drawing. Now this was something that was obviously found internally, and the young man was educated on what a stamp and a seal means, and so he won't make that mistake again. But it's one of those issues that comes up with how easy it is to copy or recreate one of those things, especially with the ignorance in the field of what that symbol actually means. For someone that should, again, he was hired to do this job. This gentleman had a background either in drafting or in engineering or in something in the industry, so he should at least been familiar with what a stamp is. The other anecdote I want to share on licensing is the fact of I am, you know, 18 years. I can't remember how long I've been licensed, actually. I've been in Arizona for 19 years, so I've been licensed at least 16. I've never had to stamp anything, right? I am industry exempt from all the places I've ever worked. I'm trying to start my own consulting company, therefore I need to be licensed because I intend to provide engineering services. The services I provide include buzzwords like model-based definition, model-based systems engineering. It's all electronic. You know, I work with, and this goes into 5C now, potential clients all the way across the state. I don't build anything. So therefore, I can't say where the work is being performed. And in the email, right, I had a potential for a client in Denver who was building something in China. And then, of course, it's a consumer device, so it would be sold wherever she can happen to be able to sell it. Where do I need to be licensed? I don't know. Where do I need to register my firm? I honestly don't know. And I'm now licensed in Washington and Florida, and they are just as confusing as Arizona. I'm going to tell you, if you get one thing out of my speech today, please don't be like Florida. Whatever you do, do not be like Florida.
Did you tell the governor that?
They are far more confusing than Arizona is, but even Arizona, to me, was not clear on how am I going to be in compliance? How do I make sure I am registered with everybody I need to be? And since I'm providing engineering service, I have to stamp my stuff. It's going to go to consumer device designers and people that have no idea what registration laws are. And they are going to abuse any engineering stamp or anything I put on there because purely out of ignorance. So that's my fear and the reason why I ask for clarification on those.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Just to add a little to something Doug and I ran into, a question from ADOT. You know, a firm designs components of a bridge, and their engineers aren't required to be licensed because it's an industry. They design for the company. But then ADOT buys that component and applies it to a public works project. Does that exemption continue?
My head's going to hurt after this meeting.
Where's Leroy when you need him?
Great questions.
So when Scott brought up the questions, I'm like, we have that question too.
Yeah. You know, in my prior life, when I was an assistant AG advising boards and commissions on issues like this, what I would say is we always have to look to what our state rules and laws say. And my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is if you're doing the work here, your registration requires that you be registered here. And that's why you have a stamp that says registered in Arizona. So your responsibility as a registrant is to abide by Arizona state law and rule. So even though you are consulting and your work would be going out to other states, you still have the registration requirement in Arizona to practice here lawfully, and that's why your stamp and seal specifically say register PE in Arizona, and then you sign it.
So, far be it for me to disagree with you on this.
No, please.
I would never do that. But, I mean, I practice all over the country.
Uh-huh.
And so I do a lot of the work that I do, Virginia, for example, because that's where I've done most of my work. I do a lot of the work here. But I am required to be licensed in Virginia because,
okay.
And as Mr. Wortel pointed out, I'm doing something that's going to get built. It's a building.
In Virginia.
In Virginia. Okay. But I'm not sure I'm adding any clarity to the situation. I'm probably muddying it more because I'm doing the work here, but I'm required to be licensed in Virginia because that's where the work
will be done.
That's where my client is, mm-hmm. and that's where the work will be done. So there could be an argument made. I'm not saying that I agree with this, but there could be an argument made that Mr. Wortel needs to be, if he's doing work for a client in Colorado, he needs to be licensed in Colorado because that's where his client is.
Interesting. Okay.
So sometimes I think it, and who knows where it gets built. Our buildings get built from components from all over the world. So.
And what if they never are built?
A project with seating coming in from Colombia. So, you know, I mean, it's just.
If I may, it seems to me that an Arizona certification would be enough. And if the product was going to Virginia or going to Florida, that it would be up to that state or their Board of Technical Registration, whoever they have, to require something more. If they won't accept your Arizona registration, it just seems to me that they should tell you what they would want. I wouldn't go any further than registering in Arizona. Not the work that you do, Mr. Marley, but the work that you do, okay? As Mr. Marley knows, if he's designing in Virginia, he's going to be built in Virginia. You don't know that. So as a basis, I would start in Arizona and wait for someone else to tell you what they require.
Or consult an attorney in another state to see if your work would require registration there as well.
Yeah. What do
I think each state is different, though.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
What do engineers do for mobile homes, for instance? Mobile homes get built in Pennsylvania, they get built in Kentucky, they get built in a lot of places and shipped all over the country. Do their architects and engineers have to be certified in all the places they ship to?
Most states have a residential exemption.
Right.
So they would fall outside of that.
Okay.
Which would not require registration.
Which would not require registration.
And you currently work without the need for registration, right?
My full-time employer, yes, obviously, and my entire career has been industry exempt. I got licensed because I knew someday I'd want to go into business for myself.
Right.
And so, yeah, I've never needed it, never used it. I'm at the point now, it's been 2 years, and in my specific situation, I just had to refile with the Corporation Commission to change my whole structure because my partner's in Florida. That's why I know so much about Florida now. So in order to create a foreign entity in Florida, I had to do that. And here's where Florida's really funny. I actually have to register my form with the technical board in Florida before I can actually create a business entity in Florida because
wow.
The business entity side of it won't allow me to perform engineering services until the board says that I can.
Right.
So you can't create a business that you might do engineering until you get pre-approved, and I did not know that. So I get to start that one all over now, too.
What discipline of engineering are you engaging in?
Mechanical.
Have you had an experience like that?
Well, in our work, geology or geological engineering, there's usually if you're working in another state, it's because the project is there and the services that are going to be provided are provided locally generally.
Right.
Even though we may do things in our office, say in Arizona, if the work is in Nevada,
you have to have a
then
registration.
typically you registered in both places.
Right.
I'm not a structural engineer, but I understand that this is kind of the case for structural engineers too. They typically are registered in multiple states because if their projects are there, even though they may do some of the analysis and some of the computations and so forth, let's say in an Arizona office.
Yeah.
So I think that as far as Mr. Wortel's question, I think it would be appropriate to be registered here, but depending on what you do, if you're supplying say a product, you know, that is just a component of a maybe not a building, but some manufacturing facility or something, then it's kind of like you know, other products that people provide. You don't necessarily have to be registered in every place just to sell the product. I think it depends. It's specific to what you do, I think, number one. And number two, I think it depends on the state in which you intend to sell your product or whatever it is that you are doing.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing from everyone is, if you're going to work here, enjoy your registration here, but definitely check with the other state requirements where you think your service might end up, and see if there's going to be any liability for you there. And I might recommend that you talk to like a corporate attorney or someone who understands compliance issues in other states too, just so you're safe.
And then it's part of the concern have to do with the seals going into somebody else's hands, and it's electronic seals, could it be misused?
Or? Yeah, and that's, again, it comes down to because everything I do is industry exempt, and consumer products are all industry exempt, and NASA owns Florida, so everything aviation and space related is industry exempt. I mean, if you read their rules and statutes, it's pages and pages of exemptions. You can tell NASA's written all over it. So technically, I don't have to actually stamp anything because of what is going on. But one particular interpretation could be, because it is an engineering service that I did provide, therefore, since I'm sending it out to somebody, I have to stamp it. Once it goes in the hands of somebody that has no idea what licensure is, and it's an education issue. I'm not here to solve that problem. I have another anecdote for that, if you want, to show you how even graduate engineers don't understand what PE means. Yeah, so it's there, and everything is done by email and everything else. And one thing I've learned, and I've worked mainly in the defense industry, so security, cybersecurity is stuff that I try to keep up to date with. It's only as good as the system that it was created in. The minute that electronic signature comes out of whatever system has password protection in it, it's wide open. There's nothing you can do about it. So I can have the most secure system in my home office that you can imagine, but the minute I hit send and attach it to my Outlook email, I might as well not have signed it at all.
We've discussed this issue, I think, in this committee, and I know we have at the board, because at least I know you have electronic signatures, and maybe if you would share your experience with how that...
I mean, what I do, because I had similar problem. I lesson learned, I sent out a set of documents to the printer, and when they came back, all my signatures were gone because they had combined the set. You know, they batched it into one document, so it made all the signatures go away, so I had to physically sign three sets of 100 sheets. That wasn't fun. But what I've since learned then is I reprint the sheets to PDF again, and that basically what they call flattens, and it embeds the signature in it, so it's now just a part of the graphic image of the document. So the signature's always there. There's really no way to prohibit, and we've seen it at the board where people have done exactly what you talk about. They've clipped somebody's seal and signature out of a document and pasted it onto another one and issued it as if that registrant had done the work. They paid a hefty price for doing that, but there's just only, in this today's technology, there's only so much we can do.
I'd like to add, too, that your seal, when you get a seal, that's not like the PIN number to your bank account. That's more like your W-2s or your 1099s. Everybody can look at that and use that, and that's what it's for. It's more of a public recognition than it is a private security thing. But we are responsible to secure our seals. So.
And I think that's the point, is that you're responsible to secure the seals. I noticed in here you said what the board deems acceptable methods. I don't think the board deems acceptable methods of protecting your seal. I believe that that's your responsibility.
And
you might have to go through great lengths to do so.
And unfortunately, there's just no way, once that document goes out, even if it's flattened and everything, there's just no way to keep somebody from copying and pasting it in.
I might just recommend, and I know our enforcement staff has seen this a lot, if we get a complaint that alleges against you for something that when you look at the document, you say, I didn't do this, if you can produce the original where you actually did the work and stamped it, then we'll more likely be able to say, yeah, his seal was taken and inappropriately applied to plans that he had nothing to do with. So, you know, again, maybe talking about some of these issues with an attorney who has experience doing, you know, this sort of work would help, but, you know, my advice, for what it's worth, I can't give legal advice, but would be to make sure you keep your work in a file, a PDF copy of everything that you do, that you send out, so that you will have your own proof that this is exactly what I stamped and sealed. And if it is modified somehow, you have the original and you can say, that's not my work.
One case that did come up that maybe applied, a complaint was filed against a staff person who had used the electronic seal, I think it was an architect, in drawings. The architect filed the complaint, and in the discussion, the board noted that the architect was partly at fault because he left this electronic seal on a computer that was accessible to the staff person. If he hadn't done that, you know, he would have done his due diligence, but by leaving it in a way that could be accessed even in his own office. So something that should, you know, turns your computer off after a number of minutes. There has been some discussion, is there a way to create a seal that if somebody tries to steal it, it'll become, it'll disappear, but I think there's a, right now, a lot of expense.
So I'm sorry we don't have more
yeah.
definitive answers for you, but
no,
I think all of us, because you're looking at a room full of practitioners, you know, we all struggle with that and just do the best we can. I mean, I can tell you back in the day, tell you how old I am, when we hand drafted on vellum, people would cut title blocks off and tape them on and run blueprints. You know, so I mean, there was theft of seals back in the dark ages.
Well, and we do refer, as a board, a fair amount of cases where there have been theft of stamps and seals over to the Attorney General's office, because, and we've had luck over there prosecuting people who have done that, because it's a crime, it's a fraud scheme, where the public can be harmed because they're trusting the individual who has the seal to be qualified and capable of creating plans, and you know, obviously if it's stolen by somebody who isn't qualified, then that's serious public harm. So I know Mr. Parlin, we've sent over probably a dozen of them in the past year or so for prosecution. So,
and they're not unusual cases for us to get.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm here too, is because you know, I haven't worked in a practicing professional place where anybody stamps it.
Right.
Again, my entire career has been exempt. So, you know, reading the law and interpreting what I'm supposed to do as opposed to actually getting some guidance from somebody who's lived through it is much different. So.
It is true. There's a pretty famous case in California that we heard about at a meeting. Where two employees of an engineering firm basically stole the seal of the engineering principal of the firm and applied it illegally to 750 projects in California. And many of those now need to be torn down because they weren't built to code. And there's criminal issues, but as well as, you know, the civil and the social issues of loss of a lot of that property, and so
I think in regulatory resources haven't caught up to the new
whole
problem yet. Thought it would be an opportunity to discuss so that you could hear what other professionals are thinking, but also will put us in a mindset of we need to keep our ears open for there's got to be something happening
to respond to this crisis somewhere out there.
Well, and you know, there's even some radical notions. I'm licensed in Minnesota, and you do not have a seal in Minnesota.
Really?
You put a statement on the professional document you prepare that says, prepared by Edward Marley, Minnesota Registered Architect Number Such. And so there's nothing to steal.
True.
You know.
Similar for you?
How many registrants do we have total, roughly, just a ballpark?
43,000.
There's 43,000 people in Arizona that hang their seal out every day. Multiply that by 49, because Minnesota apparently doesn't do that. But there's that many people doing it. So I think maybe you're a little overzealous in your concern.
The PDF can be your friend. Just keep copies of everything you submit.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we appreciate it. And we appreciate your research and your concern. And also, we appreciate your willingness to be considered for an EAC member. So.
Yes, I'll be back next week.
Excellent.
Great. Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's move on to agenda item 5D. And now we can get our call in.
My idea is to call in. Mr. Miller's here from ADOT. Do we want to invite him to the table?
Yeah, Mr. Miller, if you want to come up to the table, we. Yes. Yeah. Go ahead and get our call in.
Good morning.
Good morning.
For everybody, this is Dan Miller from ADOT. He is their surveyor. Is that an accurate description?
Well, there are other surveyors. I guess you could say I'm the surveyor for the right-of-way group.
This is Mike.
Hi, Mike. This is Dolly Lucero with the Arizona Board. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hi.
So you're calling, we're calling you for the meeting, the L&R meeting today?
Okay.
Okay, so.
I'll just mute and listen, okay?
Okay.
Mr. Fenner, if you could just state your name for the record first, though, please. And then
for me?
Yes.
Oh, Mike Fondren.
Okay, thank you, sir. And right, you as well.
Dan Miller, representing ADOT.
All right, Mr. Miller, thank you. So agenda item 5D is draft substantial policy statement regarding public land surveying record repositories in Arizona.
And so you know, for the record, this was an issue that came before the board, I think.
It was in the August.
It was August.
August meeting, yes.
And we had some interesting discussion. Obviously, you've seen the materials. There was a question raised by a surveyor in northern Arizona about where is the appropriate place to record these surveys. And as a result, the board forwarded this issue here to work on and hopefully recommend a substantive policy statement that would clarify the issues that were raised, specifically about whether it is a lawful interpretation of the statutes to use ADOT as a legal place to record a survey so that the public understands and has access. And Mr. Foose and our paralegal Kurt worked on this draft for you to consider today.
Okay. Mr. Miller, would you like to make any statements?
Yes, I had a copy of the draft policy statement, and I think it's pretty good. I have a few suggestions for edits and kind of a question if it should be incorporated into the policy statement or not.
Okay.
The first suggestion is just in the subject line. I think the word public should be moved to be after the word land surveying, because some people are going to interpret public land surveying as like what the BLM does and, you know, surveying of public lands. And I know that's not the intent of this, it's all surveys. The other suggestion, just to try to hammer the point, is in the last sentence of the policy statement itself, where it says Article 5 as applicable repositories of land surveys. I would just suggest putting the word public again in between applicable and repositories, just to kind of hammer the point home. One thing I didn't know how detailed you wanted the statement or all-encompassing, again, just for discussion purposes. I didn't know if at the end of the policy statement of adding on something, I just put in some words here, to add on, and therefore are entities that a registrant's due diligence search should include. I mean, I guess that's kind of implicit or understood, but I didn't know if you should state that. Just, again, kind of as a reminder of, because I know that we've seen some private land surveys done along the highway right-of-way, and there's no mention, at least on the survey, of any right-of-way plans or surveys or anything that we have available. And so it's like, leads you to wonder, okay, did they do their due diligence and look at our records before they did the survey? So that's just a suggestion of mine. The other question I had is, the statement is, again, kind of generic, which I understand generally wouldn't do, but kind of to one of the points that the complainant in the August meeting brought up, is I think the intent of this is that the county recorders, and I believe Jason may have said this, is kind of the catch-all of land surveys to be recorded if you're not doing it for one of the other agencies that is a public repository. So what I'm trying to kind of get to is that I wouldn't necessarily want somebody to read this policy statement if they're doing, you know, a lot survey in a subdivision, and then they come to ADOT and say, hey, I want to, you know, record this in your records. Well, it has nothing to do with the highway. I don't know if that's appropriate, but some people might interpret it that way. So I don't know if language needs to be added to kind of explain that difference.
I don't think so. I mean, honestly, I think simple is the best approach here. Because this stuff is already addressed, we have one registrant that is hanging on some kind of personal interpretation of 33-105, and I'll agree with them. It's a bit ambiguous, but when you say, okay, there's two entities that are excluded from this, why in the world would the legislature exclude these people? It leads you to look for some authority that they have.
Right.
And you find that authority in statute. To the extent of ADOT, it says these are admissible in court. I'm pretty sure that means it's a public record. So I think it's all obvious. All the pieces are all in place. I think we would be convoluting what exists if we try to over-explain it. So.
Yeah, no, I just thought I would bring it up for discussion.
I would favor the most simple approach that we can. I mean, these items are, this is already built, it's functioning, it's in practice. We've had one registrant make a complaint, and prior to that, I think the registrant contacted the EAC, is that correct?
He wrote to the board, I don't know about a specific EAC.
Okay, yeah. So we've had this one complaint, but we've thousands of surveys that have followed this methodology. I mean, it's kind of an anomaly, the complaint is, really, compared to the practice.
That's true.
But would a new surveyor know that ADOT, I mean, unless they're working for ADOT, that they could file there? or they can't unless they're working for ADOT file.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, but typically what happens is ADOT assumes responsibility for their own surveys, the things that happen in conjunction with ADOT,
right.
And that's,
right.
I presume, spelled out in the law. So if somebody took a survey that ADOT didn't have any reason to be associated with and said, here, ADOT, file this, I would hope that they would get laughed out of Phoenix for doing that. My office of county engineer would say that this is not appropriate. You need to go to the recorder.
Right.
And in fact, our standard of practice is to just record things anyways because we don't do a high volume of things.
Okay. But your employees record at ADOT and they don't go to the Maricopa County Recorder's Office or Yavapai County?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, and I think it's that makes a lot of sense to me because obviously ADOT's everywhere. And they would have to record in 14 different county recorder's office for every survey action, you know, survey document that they produce. It makes sense to make them one of the locations. And I think it's a matter of educating the young up and coming surveyors that when you're doing your research for a survey, you don't just look at the recorder's office. If you're near an ADOT facility, then you need to expand your search to include the ADOT records.
Well, let's back up a step on that too. They've already been identified in statute as a record repository.
Right. No,
so it's up to the young registrant to know his laws and his rules,
right,
and so on and so forth. But the safety net to the public is that when that young registrant engages with ADOT, ADOT's going to walk them through this process and ensure that their product is handled under their legal authority.
So then what we're hearing is from someone who doesn't work for ADOT, who maybe didn't know that there were surveys recorded at ADOT? I don't know.
I believe that the petitioner, I'll call him, I'm not really going to call him a complainant because at one point he said he didn't want to make a complaint, but that was his only method. So the petitioner recognizes this. He knows this goes on, but as I read the letter that was submitted with this packet, he analyzes 33105 under a microscope, and he's really, really reading this language and just excluding the rest of the ARS and the rest of the standards of practice and the things, how the profession has handled all of these things. And I'm not talking about once or twice. I'm talking about as a daily routine. It really is a standard of practice as well. So.
So we're actually looking at writing a substantive policy statement because of one individual who wasn't necessarily clear on the statutes.
That you could draw that picture from this. Now, the question has come up occasionally, and if you read 33105, giving the petitioner the benefit of the doubt, if you read 33105 by itself in a vacuum, yeah, there's confusion. You could flip a comma or change some words or do this or do all that, but when you take the collective standard of practice in addition to what ADOT's authority is, record-keeping authority, which is lengthy. It's is nearly as lengthy as the county recorders and the county engineers, which is one or two lines. But when you take those things, that authority given to those agencies, and couple them with this, it just falls right into place. And you say, oh, geez, that's why they're mentioned as separate entities here, because they have statutory authority somewhere else. Nowhere in here does it say something to the effect of the Board of Technical Registration shall record surveys, right?
Right.
Because we have nothing to do with it, right?
Right.
So their recognition, ADOT and the county engineer's recognition in this statute, I believe it's there because it's addressed somewhere else. So.
And we test for this on our state-specific surveying exam, correct?
I took mine in 2005.
Oh, okay.
So I think it was question 13B. I would suspect that this would be there. Okay. This statute would be there. Anyways, they would know this statute. Okay. So.
Certainly your question is, I think, a good one. Perhaps the committee wants to talk about that. I don't know if maybe Mr. Fondren wants to be heard on the issue.
I agree. I would concur that the subject line of that public being moved around, so there's no confusion there. But no, I agree with everything that's been said. I don't have any other comments.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? I hate to go down the path of a substantive policy statement if it's a one-off that 99% of the land surveyors in Arizona know the drill and know what to do.
I'm inclined to end up in the same place based on something a little different, and that is it's already codified.
That's what I'm alluding to, is it's in the statutes. The statutes are not unclear. I would agree with you that, the screen went blank, of course, that 105A could be a little, it's so specific about county recorder, and then you get to A1, and then it throws in county recorder, county engineer, or Department of Transportation. It's like, well, why weren't those mentioned up in A?
And
who knows, but that's historical.
That's the way things
get
written.
How things
get
written.
By committee,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, yeah.
But the fact is they're there and they have authority somewhere
else. And they
have
statutory authority elsewhere.
What I'd like to do as a committee is ask Mr. Miller, do you see any benefit to a clarification, an official clarification, over the way this is written right now, over not doing anything?
Well, in my particular opinion, I would like to see a policy statement, just because this issue does come up periodically, has over the last 20 years I've been involved with ADOT. This would finally put it to rest. That's my opinion.
So there is some frequency. I mean, you see some frequency in this. We've seen it once.
Can I comment on that?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Sorry, Jason.
That's all right. Go ahead.
I would back up Dan's comments on that over the 16 years that I served on the board for APLS, most of the time I served as the Ethics and Standards Committee Chair, and I too have had this question asked many times over the years. Most surveyors, though, when they ask the question and we would show them the statute and explain to them what was going on, they go, oh, okay, and it didn't go any further than that. But I would agree with Dan that, the 16 years that I served on the board for APLS, the question did come up occasionally.
Okay.
It's just that most people were satisfied with the response that we gave them and realized then that they should be looking for records in there. I think it's been quite a while, but at one time, I know Dan personally put on some seminars for APLS, and it was part of the education process at that time to teach the people in the room how to retrieve the records that are on the internet, on ADOT's website, and there is quite a bit of history on the question. It's just that most people that I've ever dealt with, once you explained to them, understood it and didn't feel the need to press it to the board for a particular review. So.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, I'm not saying we don't do it. I think the question, but I think if it's kind of been prevalent over the years that even if we're not seeing it or the board's not seeing it, it doesn't hurt anything.
I think so. For the sake of whatever perceived in clarity is in 33-105, I think we should go ahead. But I would also suggest that we really, really limit our statement, and let's, if we can as a committee, agree to leave the education part out of it. And by that I mean you should be looking here for your records. That's up to maybe the APLS or the mentor or someone like that. I think we should just limit our observation to directing the reader of the policy statement to the other statutes as well. So.
And it seems to do that. I mean, it's three lines. It's one of the shortest substantive policy statements we've seen in a while. And it does reference 11.562 for county engineer and ARS 28, Chapter 2, Article 5 for ADOT. So, and I'm comfortable with the suggested moving, you know, the words to think, moving public and adding public to the substantive policy statement. Any other thoughts, gentlemen?
I would, personally, I would merely move the three other depositories up to the first paragraph with the words as applicable.
Yeah, unfortunately that requires literally an act of the legislature.
In the substantive policy statement, move.
Those are excerpts from the statute.
Right, but so. to move to use those words with county recorder as applicable and then just right away.
Well, I would the way the policy statement itself, which is the last paragraph here, reads, it refers only to Department of Transportation. It doesn't address the United States Bureau of Land Management, which is in the rule.
Yeah, it does address the county engineer and ADOT.
And I think it should also address what else is in the rule, just so that there, because it almost sounds like we're leaving that out in the policy statement, it seems to me. I know the question is primarily related to ADOT, it seems to be, but I would think that it might be more clear to have in the policy statement to include everyone who's in the rule.
So do we have
or in the statute, I should say, not the rule, sorry,
right.
In the statute.
Do we have a U.S. Code citation for?
Yeah, that's what you would do.
You have to do it for. If we're going to list each one, we're going to have to come up with a U.S. Code citation.
That's why they're absent. And then you get to the point of a federal and a state battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what law is is stronger or so. I think that the U.S. Bureau of Land Management has provided whatever notice they need as a record-keeping source. That might have happened at statehood. It might have happened through some other action. But it has happened. I mean, it's like saying the post office can put mail in your mailbox, right? It's that old
notification. That's my fear. I mean, I don't disagree that it should be included in there just because it's in the statute. But at the same time,
and I don't think that we file. As private surveyors, we don't file with the BLM. We just use them as a resource. The BLM has their own federal surveyors, which are exempt from our rules, and they have their own federal records management.
Well, is it necessary to cite in the policy statement, is it necessary to cite the Title 28, Chapter 2, Article 5, which is not, it's not referenced here anywhere? I mean, if it's the board's intention to say that the board interprets interprets this ARS 33105A1 to mean that recording with the county recorder, the county engineer, the ADOT, or the Bureau of Reclamation is the same as recording with the county recorder, then it seems to me we ought to say that. That's all I'm saying. It just doesn't seem clear to me.
Okay.
I'm wondering if it makes things less clear by doing this.
I guess we could word it more actively by saying, by summarizing something like this off the cuff, in response to inquiries over the years, the board's now I'm reading your language.
I say we keep it simple and we go back to the statute.
That gives the authority citing those other statutes.
Yeah, that's right.
That's
a great point, Dan. And if you look at the county engineer's statute, it's one line that pretty much says, and it was written in 1913 or 1912, and it says the county engineer shall be the responsible party, paraphrasing, for all of his records. Okay, so it's It's one sentence written a long time ago. ADOT has a whole, is it a chapter?
Like 10 or 12 different.
It's an article. They have a whole article titled Records, and it establishes the authority and the processes and the responsibilities and the public records and the judicial notice part of it. So it's a big, long slinky. It's not one line. It's many times the size of the statute we're even talking about here for the 33-105. So
you don't want to say something like the board recognizes the authority, ADOT's authority and county engineer's authority and county recorder's authority to record surveys, that sort of thing, pursuant to the following statutes, something like that.
That's already there, though.
This
says it?
I think that, it only says it in the statute. It doesn't say it in the policy statement.
Right.
So if we're going to issue a policy statement, it seems to me the policy statement needs to cite the statutes or the...
Then ideally we should
do it for the other two entities that are repositories. That's my thought. I just think it makes it clearer. I think it, because right now it almost sounds like, well, it's our interpretation that ADOT's a repository, but we're not so sure about Bureau of Land Management or the county recorder.
They have a one-way repository, and it's out to us. It's not us to them. So it doesn't...
So there's no requirement for a surveyor to record with the Bureau of Land Management.
I'm going to record a survey in three places, according to this. The county recorder, ADOT, or the county engineer. It'll be one of those three in Arizona.
So it sounds like our statute may have some antiquated language that regarding United States Bureau of Land Management, that it's just not done that way.
You know, that may have changed in around 1977 when the federal government went through their changes with the BLM and went from land disposal to land management. I don't know, but I think that's a little bit outside of what we have here. We have a statute that does work, 33-105,
right?
And then we have a question that says it's written funny, and then we have authority spelled out in other parts of the Arizona Revised Code, and then thousands and thousands of examples of the standard of practice of care and ADOT's implementation of their authority under statute and the county engineer.
How about if we say something like, pursuant to ARS 33-105, the board recognizes, or I don't know if recognizes the right word, but the board recognizes ADOT and the county recorder and the county engineer as official locations for
public records,
the recordation of surveys, public land surveys, something like that.
Yeah, it's fine with me.
I like it.
You do?
It's simple.
Yeah.
And it clarifies that you can, as a surveyor, you can record at any of those three. Hopefully they're doing it.
Yeah, without
saying,
what you got to be careful of,
yeah,
it's too general, because you don't want somebody just recording at ADOT just because they've done something that's 20 miles away from an ADOT facility.
Yeah. Right. Well, somebody's going to come up and say, you need to record this for me now, which that's why I think deferring to the statutes themselves might add strength, because ADOT can say, no, here's our statutes, this is what it is.
It gives further clarity, so you don't come in with some parcel that's, like I said, 20 miles from Highway 87 and say, record this.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think there should be a heck of a lot clearer if you just took those words as applicable, put them at the end of the paragraph and made it where applicable.
Yeah, where applicable.
And be done with it. Unless, of course, it doesn't keep the BLM in there. But.
Okay, so pursuant to ARS 33-105, board recognizes ADOT, county engineer's offices, and county recorder's offices as lawful locations for to record public land surveys where applicable?
Actually, I like the substantive policy statement that's actually listing these items.
I like it with the citations. I'm still leaning on keeping the citations in there. But what Mr. Leeds is saying is saying Chapter 2, Article 5, as
repositories.
As public repositories of land surveys where applicable.
I like that. Okay.
And that would be simple. And I would understand that. The way it was written the first time, I didn't even recognize it as a SPS.
Repositories as where... Okay, so... As public land survey repositories where applicable.
As public repositories of land surveys?
Public repositories of land surveys.
Where applicable.
Mm-hmm.
And leave all the sites in. So we say the board interprets the statute to include the county engineer's authority under ARS 11 and ADOT's authority under ARS Title 28 as public repositories for land surveys where applicable.
Of land surveys where applicable.
Yeah. And then change the subject up at the top to say land surveying public records repositories in Arizona.
Public repositories of land surveys where applicable.
Yeah.
All right.
So, any
Bill's
further discussion?
Well, I'm still not. I'm still concerned that, that it doesn't address the
BLM.
The BLM. Or, for that matter, the county engineer. And I'm just thinking...
The county engineer's addressed.
No, it didn't. Oh, yes, it is. I apologize.
ARS 11...
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. You're correct. County engineer's addressed. So it leaves out the Bureau of BLM.
But I don't think it does. I know you read it that way, but if you read what we've said, it says the board interprets ARS to include. It doesn't say to exclude the recorder, does it? And is that a fatal flaw we've got here, or do we have a fatal flaw?
I think our substantive policy statements need to get to the root of what is unclear. Recording at the county recorder's office is clear.
Right.
There's nobody around that says, oh, I didn't know I had to record at the county recorder's office. What's brought us here today is the lack of clarity in these other two agencies being repositories for surveys. And three, technically, but it sounds like in today's management of the BLM or however, whatever you want to look at, they are not a repository.
Well, I don't feel that. I mean, I'm not a surveyor, so I wouldn't probably know, but I'm not convinced that we know. Do you know for sure? Do the surveyors know for sure that there's no requirement to report no repository at the BLM for surveys?
I don't think they would. To me, if they don't know that, they have no right to be registered. That's kind of very basic knowledge, in my opinion.
So there are
surveys.
If there are, there are not.
Well, yeah, they are on file.
They are.
Because they are commissioned, by themselves, and they have. Their surveyors do it, and then they file the survey once it's been accepted.
Okay, but their surveyors don't need to be registered in Arizona.
They have the federal exemption.
Right.
But they're also not working under state authority. They're working under federal authority on federal lands. All the stuff that applies to state authority has been incorporated somehow, or theoretically has been incorporated either through the recorder's office or through whatever notice the federal government gave to the state and statehood to say, these are the surveys you use.
So there's no requirement that a surveyor practicing in Arizona should record anything with the Bureau of Land Management?
Unless they're working specifically for the
BLM.
That'd be outside of what we do.
Yeah, so it sounds to me like the BLM surveys are only conducted by federal surveyor employees, right?
Right, or under contract.
Under contract. But then, if you were...
Now, here's a scenario, though.
Yeah.
Somebody could make the argument that the original GLO plat done in 1872, mind you, statehood was 1912, done in 1872, wasn't recorded, so it's no good. So that would be the reason to have the Bureau of Land Management in this statement saying, please, don't go to your recorder and record all of these. They're already public notice with the federal government at that statehood transfer.
Yeah. Could we, I know we
BLM.
Hate, I was going to say we could include BLM, and I hate to include vagaries like this, but as under applicable U.S. code,
Not good. Let's not go there. I'll tell you why. Because every surveyor that calls me says, I'm working up on the reservation. Do I need to record this? And my question or my response to them is, I don't know. Do you? Whose authority? I mean, seriously, whose authority are you working under?
Right.
I don't know who you're working for or what you're doing.
Yeah.
Whose authority are you under? So if it's under state authority, yes, absolutely. Our state laws say this. If it's under federal authority, I don't know. That's federal authority. That's outside of my scope of knowledge.
If I could comment on that.
Certainly. Yeah, please.
We do a substantial amount of work for the Navajo Reservation, and we work under their authority, and those surveys are given to them. And they're not recorded with anything but the Navajo Reservation. They're the repository mainly because they actually cross state lines. We work in New Mexico and in Arizona. So you're surveying on the reservation. I'm not aware that you would be there unless you were working for whatever tribal authority that you're there. Then you work under the rules and laws.
That's right.
Which are different. So.
It is the equivalent of working in a foreign jurisdiction to us.
Yeah.
I agree.
And even the federal land, the federal land itself is in the survey context.
So what I'm hearing is there are a lot of governments...
Well, I was just referring, excuse me.
No, go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's right.
I was referring to the language that's in the statute, which refers to the Bureau of Reclamation. And I'm not expanding it to Navajo nations or Indian nations or all these other places, or, well, maybe there aren't that many other places, but something that's not specifically stated in the statute. And that's why it seems to me that if we leave that out of the policy statement, we're not addressing the entire question. That's all I'm saying.
I hear you. I understand.
And I mean, I'm not going to oppose it just based on not leaving it, not putting it in. I'm just raising the issue that it seems to me that it doesn't, as a policy statement, doesn't... it isn't completely clear.
Okay.
That would be the next question. Well, how about the BLM? Then we'll have to address that again. So I'm with William as to put it in right after Article 5, United States Bureau and the United States Bureau of Land Management as public repositories, land surveys where applicable. And this way...
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I think I am too.
I don't feel a requirement to do that.
Maybe our legal staff feels that's necessary, but I don't think it is.
Let's try it.
Yeah.
I've already asked our legal counsel to weigh in on this, if it goes to the board, and we can see if he feels there needs to be a federal citation.
Yeah.
But
we're not the last call on that.
I like it. I appreciate your logic. We can tweak it a little more because we are
looking at in the second paragraph of the rule or of the statute, A1 does say county recorder, county engineer, highway division of ADOT, or BLM. So we should include all of them in the policy statement.
Right.
It's just a matter of do we need to cite a federal law?
BLM.
So I have a question. Where do surveys for state land department get recorded?
State land.
They're not on the list. I just noticed they're painfully absent from the list. They own a lot of land in this state, and they do a lot of land transactions.
They're recorded at the county recorder's office.
That's right.
Because they're a transaction of public notice in Arizona.
Yeah, okay.
So
that's just, like I said, showing my ignorance of surveying.
My suspicion, though, for a little bit of experience I've had with that, is that I don't know what their policy is now, but I know from decades ago, they would hire surveyors to do, you know, survey on their land, and they just kept it in their records.
Yeah.
That's it.
So they're kind of their own repository.
As we go there, go through their drawers, which were not very organized, at least at that time, to see if they had a survey in your area that you were working.
If I may?
Yes.
We also, the company I'm with now, we also do a lot of state land surveys. And I mean, Jason's absolutely correct. There's a public notice that's involved there. And everything we do with them, at the time that the state land is done with the survey, we're recording them.
Okay.
In whatever county recorder's office that's appropriate. So.
Great answer. I just,
thank
you, know,
you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. It's just one of those out there, I thought, well, this is another government agency that... I just anticipating another question.
Yeah.
Year from
now. That's fair enough, although it's not in the current...
No, it's not.
...statute, but...
I could see somebody asking the questions.
Thanks a lot, Ed.
Well, got it out of the way now.
It did. Okay.
Any other discussion? Otherwise, I think we have an approach, and
yes,
hopefully we've captured some revised wording. So I'll entertain a motion to move this to the full board for consideration.
I move that we forward this to the board for consideration.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you for a good discussion.
Thank you, gentlemen, for a good discussion. And thank you, Mike and Dan, for giving us your input. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for letting me call in.
You bet, Mike.
Thanks. Thanks, Dan.
Let's go back to agenda item 5A.
Could we take a 5-minute break?
Yes, that would
certainly
be great.
Thank you.
It's somewhere 100,000.
It's like a government.
All right.
No one has any say.
Melissa, are we ready?
We are, sir.
All
thank
right.
you for asking.
I'm a stern taskmaster today. I'm going to get
I
back.
Hear
I'm
you.
Going on vacation tomorrow.
Okay.
I'm motivated. Public submitted question on interpretation, definition, and intent regarding ARS 32143, which has that wonderful term that we all love so much.
Incidental.
Necessary and incidental. So, we scrolled down in the packet. We got a question from Richard M. Anderson, P.E., Stormwater Review Manager at City of Scottsdale. And I am always happy and would like to thank Mr. Anderson for actually asking the question rather than interpreting the board's rules, because that happens way too many times, so I love it when they bring us questions like this. So they had an architect who prepared and sealed a plan for a guest house, including grading and setting the low floor elevation. I'm trying to determine whether that is acceptable under this statute. I'm confused about the wording necessary and incidental to. So, thoughts? I don't think we could ever define necessary and incidental.
I don't think we can either. And I think that's the purpose of those words, is to address things that are unforeseen.
Well, I think it's also to allow some latitude in non-public works projects to the registrants to allow them to do work like a grading plan on a guest house. There's no civil engineers in the room, so I can say this. I carefully check every civil engineering site plan I get, because they do great with roads projects. They don't know how to establish grades around my buildings.
Interesting.
I send them red lines that says, this is how it needs to be graded, because they don't seem to catch everything. They don't catch all the cross slopes for ADA. They end up with cut areas that are 3 feet below the neighboring property, which happened on my own office building. You know, I mean, it's stuff like that that, to me, as I look at this, my first question is, well, what did this architect do anything wrong? Did he screw up?
Right, that's a, I think, a valid question.
If he graded it properly, did he do the electrical on the guest house? If he did, and he didn't screw up, he probably possesses the proper technical knowledge and skill to do electrical on residential projects. Could he design the electrical service on an Intel project? No.
Right.
But,
so you're saying design it's the mechanical judgment system? Of the
I think it's the
registrant.
Judgment of the registrant. We, you know, we are not a totalitarian police state here, and we don't, you know, we allow our registrants a certain degree of latitude in deciding what is within their capabilities. Because quite honestly, within the practice of architecture, there may be projects like an Intel facility that I would not touch. Because even though I'm licensed, my license says I could do that Intel facility, I know my own limits,
right,
and I know I don't know the requirements and what goes into a project of that complexity versus a healthcare facility that I can do because I have the knowledge and skill to do it.
Right, and we've seen, I'm thinking particularly of that architect case down in Sierra Vista where he was redesigning a school. I don't know if you gentlemen.
Well, there was
heard
a civil engineer. That
was
in Nogales.
Not an architect, right.
It was a civil engineer who did a project, a classroom building for Santa Cruz Community College. And I ran out of time finding all the code violations
right.
were in it, and that was deemed not necessary and incidental to his practice of civil engineering.
Right.
He was not qualified to do the work.
And that's the way this should go. Based upon a complaint, and then the courts would decide for the specific case whether it meets necessary and incidental too. It's out of our hands.
I'm a little bit leery though. I mean, if she drowned, she wasn't a witch, right?
I like that.
That's pretty good. So, you had to think a while for that.
But, I mean, you know, this particular situation, that's the whole, in my mind, that's the reason we have words like necessary and incidental. Was it necessary and incidental to the project to set a grade on a building in the back or the outbuilding or, yeah, or the grading around it? What makes it necessary and incidental? What prompted that registrant not to hire an engineer or some design specialist or whoever would do
that? Landscape architect, for that matter.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, I look at their definitions, and they have a lot of latitude to do a lot of different things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what happened in this case to make it necessary or to qualify it as necessary and incidental? Is it a cost benefit to the owner? Is it just efficiency, timing? Does it maintain the contract in a tidy way? You know, that's good.
But how are you going to get in there before the witch drowns or the non-witch drowns? I mean, it has to happen after the fact.
Well,
someone
or
has
or
to
it's
actually
a case
say
of public,
a problem.
Or it's a case of just the professional using knowing their own limits.
Exactly.
You know, when I designed my sister's and my parents' home, I started out with the intent of doing the site grading. Because it's like, hey, as I got into it and found out they're in a FEMA Zone X shaded, I went, no, now I need to hire a civil engineer to do the grading because I'm going to have to raise the pad elevation. Once I got to that level, that became, now I still checked his grades to make sure that they all resolved to the property line, but I knew my limits, and I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that, and so I hired a civil engineer to do it.
So the inquirer here What are his qualifications? What is his role?
So
is he a city reviewer?
He's a city reviewer. It looks like stormwater review manager, stormwater management, city of Scottsdale. So here's we have to read it. We have to infer into this, unless Mr. Parlin, you have further insights as to what.
No, I know we invited him to be here. It would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been really, really helpful.
Is he a registrant?
He is. Yes. He's
okay.
A PE.
Okay.
But, you know, there's some other context we can look at here because we see it all the time. People use this as an excuse to say, I'm a civil engineer, but I've set up shop as a land surveyor. You know, that's not necessarily incidental specific to a project, but we hear it all the time. Or I'm a civil engineer, but I'm only doing structural engineering. There is a danger with it of people just saying, the door's open, I can walk through and do whatever I want.
Yeah, I mean, we're always going to get the bad kids.
Yeah. That I think that's the point.
Yeah.
But one scenario here is that this architect designed this guest house and he graded it, and it had to go through stormwater review at the city of Scottsdale, and this PE, either it didn't pass or this PE just said, hey, you should be hiring a civil engineer, and he's probably a PE civil, being in stormwater management, and so he may have just raised the question to go, because quite honestly, unless city of Scottsdale required it, this is an exempt project if it weren't done
exactly.
by a registrant.
Exactly. I'm thinking
drafting service, a designer could have done this project and graded it and done just fine, and it could have gone through and it wouldn't even be in front of us. But it has an architect's seal on it.
Did we encourage him to file a complaint if he felt like the work was substandard?
Yeah. I think he's on the AEC. He knows.
Okay. I love the questions like, what's incidental to a civil engineer or someone building a building? Because I've heard engineers love to do this. Well, we could design an entire building, and it would look like a box and not be pretty, but we could put some decorative things around the window. That would be incidental.
And some curtains.
But, you know, are they qualified and will the building stand up is the issue, I think, rightly before the board. Did they do it correctly and follow all the codes?
And what people, they look at safety.
Right.
This is kind of this paramount. They forget about the health and welfare part of it. And that's where it all comes together, and that's why you have a team that designs a building like this one, where you have someone who, you know, understands the arts and science of design, and that's an architect that makes it look good, and it makes it to be a pleasant environment for people to come to and work in and all that most of the time. And then you've got
unless
a structural engineer that keeps
project.
It from falling down. You've got a mechanical engineer that deals with health, safety, and welfare because now you've got adequate ventilation. It's the right temperatures, except this room. You know, and you know, I'm just shooting holes in all of it. You got an electrical engineer that makes sure you got the right lighting and outlets in the right spot to plug in our coffee maker and all that good stuff. So,
but that's what a smart architect does as like the head of the project.
But if you came in and said, I want to move this wall over, and you hired me to do it, and it meant moving a couple outlets, that's necessary and incidental to the work I'm doing. I don't need to hire an electrical engineer to move an outlet, or to even add one necessarily, because I have the knowledge and skill, I feel, to do something like that, because I can look at the panel schedule, know how many watts are on that circuit, know, I can add another 360 watts to it and meet the requirements. So, I mean, it's just... We have to keep it a little bit fluid.
I hear you.
If we don't,
there's
almost no need for the enforcement division of this board, or maybe even for the board itself. I mean, there has to be some flexibility. Yeah.
Do you see this kind of issue on projects related to geology and?
Not a lot.
Geological engineering, not so much.
I think not so much.
Okay. You know, I would see it from the other side that engineers would want to hire geologists because they don't have the even geo.
Yeah, geotech engineers sometimes feel like, you know, they can do everything.
Yeah.
But geologists know that they can't do everything, and sometimes, you know, they get in trouble when they try to sort of go outside of their field, which is primarily strength of materials. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that that's really not incidental, though, I don't think. And I don't think most most geologists are even, maybe some of the soils engineers feel it's incidental, but much less now than it was 20 years ago or 30 years
yeah.
ago. Or,
so I could see where we would get a complaint against an engineer who thought they could do all the geological related calculations and when they couldn't have or
when
it wasn't
or didn't.
Incidental
have, yeah.
to the project,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And I think if we looked back through the history of this board, probably the bulk of the necessary and incidental complaints that come up are against architects.
Or engineers.
But probably more architects, just because there's architects out there. I used to work for one right out of school who did he did apartment complexes and he did all the electrical work.
Wow.
And that's when the rule, finally the 600 amp rule came in, because he was doing 1,000 amp services on his apartment complexes, and you know, nothing was wrong, but that's not necessary and incidental. But you know, you're doing work for developers and it's got to be done cheap. That's how you get it done cheap.
In this particular instance, it seems to me that because he's talking about a guest house, he's not talking about some major structure, that sort of says to me, okay,
incidental.
This is incidental. Or
yeah.
More likely to be incidental than another case.
I guess our answer to him is this meets the definition of necessary and incidental.
Yeah.
Well, and we're not willing to go any further than that than defining it. And I think the question to pose to him is, if he has found a significant problem that's a threat to health, safety, or welfare, then he needs to report it as a violation and let the board address it.
Yeah, I agree.
I'd agree with that. Melissa, is there a legal definition somewhere, like a generic legal law school 101 definition? I mean, this is the only place I've ever seen necessary and incidental collected in the way it is.
Yeah, and what we do is we look to the general definition. We would go to a dictionary and look up what's the definition of incidental and what's the definition of necessary. There may be a slightly more involved definition in a legal dictionary, but that's where you go because you want to be able to give legal advice that real people can understand in situations like this. So I think you guys have reached a very relevant conclusion here that, you know, what's incidental, you know, it would have been a project that would be exempt, a designer could have done it. Incidental probably would be defined in that way, and then obviously if there's a problem with the wiring or the drainage or whatever this person was concerned about, he could have submitted a complaint against that individual.
Then it's not incidental anymore.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And when it fails, it's not incidental.
Right. Exactly.
Well, no, it still is incidental. I think that it's incidental in the sense that it was originally done as sort of part of the project, but if it wasn't done correctly,
that's the issue.
Yeah. That becomes the issue.
It's a different issue.
It becomes a technical knowledge and skill issue.
Right.
So what you're saying is that incidental won't really be brought up as any complaint. It would be that the fact that it failed that it was inadequate.
Proper technical
The proper skill.
So we'll never really get to define incidental.
Right, because it wouldn't be at issue in that complaint. It would be the lack of technical knowledge and skill. So, I like your discussion.
I don't think we need to take action on it.
No. Can you get back with the strategy?
Would you say this is the generally accepted definition of both? I mean, they are well-defined words. As well as that you should be able to go and look.
Go to Webster.
and arrive at a conclusion.
Yeah, and again, if he has concerns the work wasn't done up to par, then we can call Mr. Parnell. Thank you.
All right. Item 5 E, possible legislation to amend ARS 127C regarding cancellation of registration.
Yep. This was an interesting issue that came up as a result of how long it's been taking to get our complaints prosecuted by the AG's office. Our investigative staff does a great job of moving investigations through the process pretty timely. And coming before the board for an action, either to resolve a complaint informally or to schedule it for formal hearing. But when someone doesn't sign a consent, it goes on the list for formal hearing and has been sitting there for quite a long time. We were up to 45 formal hearings. And as a result, we had to bring four cases to the board last month to dismiss because they were on longer than a year, and home inspector certifications expire sometime. I think we had two PEs, and
well, and home inspectors can be revoked if they lose their
financial assurance.
Right.
So we're not getting to the merits of the complaint in cases like that, and legally we're losing jurisdiction over those licensees right. when their licenses are canceled due to delinquency. And some licensees in our past history with other boards purposely don't renew if they think they're going to be disciplined. And this, the health reg boards have cured this by a statute that you've seen mm-hmm. in your packet that says they retain jurisdiction even if the license expires, basically.
Or the license can't be canceled as long as there's a pending
right, a disciplinary matter. So we don't have that because our practice act is old, and our practice act was designed for the five professions that were established for a 3-year registration. But now that we've added home inspectors who expire more quickly, we're finding that we may have a problem unless we can get the AG's office to prosecute them more quickly.
And even the 3 years isn't a protection if the complaint comes in, you know, year 2.5, well, I just let my license lapse. Oops, you can't do anything.
Right. So, we think you guys should discuss what you want to do. Do you think it's a good idea to pursue a legislative amendment to include jurisdiction like the health reg boards have done? I think even accountancy has one too.
Mm-hmm.
Accountancy,
yes.
real estate, and health reg. Those are the three examples
right.
we put in the packet.
Are we talking about statute now?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because the closest we have in statute is 32.127G, where it says a registrant shall not place a registrant certificate of registration on inactive status if the person's certificate of registration
right.
has been canceled by the board. Pursuant to subsection C of this section, but
doesn't talk about disciplinary action though.
Right.
We can't do this in rule where it would be a rule that if there's a complaint against someone we can just
check it out, maybe.
We stop the registrant's status where it is at the time.
Process.
My thought is probably no, or these wouldn't maybe enroll to the statute, but you know it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Maybe there's enough in our statute that we could build. For a rule, it has to be authorized by statute.
Right.
So you can't just make a rule.
Right.
But maybe there's enough in there.
I threw through there's nothing other than G that comes even
right.
close.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, when we brought these cases before the board, there are somewhat saving graces in that the complaint closes, and if the licensee wants to come back and get re-registered, then we'll say, well, you have this unresolved complaint. We also have the authority to investigate unlicensed practice. So if home inspectors or land surveyors who have been canceled and we've lost jurisdiction over them are practicing without being registered, we can pursue it that way and go up to Superior Court for injunctions. But I think it's worth a discussion about whether whether the board would feel it important to maintain jurisdiction while a disciplinary action is pending. I mean, I'm happy to tell the legislature it's the AG's office that's slacking off here, because in my opinion, it clearly is. But maybe we do, as a board, need to take some responsibility. So that's why it's here. What do you think?
I like it.
You like
I think part of the obligation, the responsibility of the registrant not to weasel out if he's going to get stomped on.
Okay.
And it also, it enables us to report to other jurisdictions if we complete the action. I think that's probably the most important aspect of it.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Especially now with the movement to make registration easy across state lines, that it's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Was there one statute you like better than others?
Are you pursuing statute or rule?
We'll check out rule, but we might have to pursue statute.
My guess is we're probably going down the statute path, just because I can't think of any enabling legislation that would allow us to write to codify a rule.
Yeah, I think Peter was right that that's the closest statute, but I don't know.
We'll talk to Chris.
Yeah.
It's kind of easy
going. Well, I think right now, as it stands, our board staff probably has the best experience with health boards, correct? You would have the best understanding as staff of what happens on the health boards.
That's where I applied it, and it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
That language was easy to apply. It's clear, as opposed to the two non-health boards, their language is a little confusing.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know. I thought real estate was really clear. It's two sentences. I loved it. Three sentences, sorry. On request of a licensee, the department may cancel that person's license if both the following are true. License is not presently under investigation by the department, and two, the department has not commenced any disciplinary proceeding against the licensee.
And that might fit
but this dried,
but
with
this
our statute.
Yeah.
We can take out requests, because it's not... With those two boards, people can request that their license be canceled. They can't with ours.
Right.
So we would just take out requests.
It would fit in with the statute.
Because it probably needs to be, a lot of these folks, you can't request to have your license canceled, but you just let it lapse, basically, is what you do. You don't pay.
So we would just finagle that one.
So what I like about the health reg board is it says, we're going to suspend your license. It's still going to be a license. You are still going to be licensed, even though you haven't paid, is what I'm inferring.
Yeah.
But we're going to suspend your license, and you're still on the hook. You're still regulated under this board. So I like that's the essence we need to capture.
So I think if we have a strong knowledge base and experience in any one of these, which seems to be the health boards, that might be the easiest for us to advance, because we have the best institutional knowledge of that one. Although I like the real estate one. It's cut and dried. It's simple. But I think getting through the process, maybe being able to explain the history behind this and how it was formulated, how it rolled out in practice.
I think it's always wise to be able to go in for a legislative request with something that's got a good historical foundation.
Right. And what I think would be wise is if we keep this as a topic for your next meeting, and we'll be able to see if maybe we can do it by rule, and then bring you the language we would propose either for a rule or for a statute, and then have further discussion at that time.
The statute, we won't get it dropped.
Yeah,
right, it would
forever.
Be next session.
It would be next session.
Right.
2020?
Your wording should include that last sentence of the health board.
Yeah.
Your certificate is suspended on the date it would otherwise expire or terminate. I really like that.
You like that? Okay.
Right. Okay. It protects the public.
Right. Yep. It does.
And you shall not practice.
You shall not practice. But under investigation, you can still practice under investigation. It's not until you're told to cease and desist that
Right.
Home inspectors, for instance,
right. Unless you're summarily suspended. suspended.
Yeah.
Right.
We don't have cease and desist authority.
We don't, but we can summarily suspend.
Yeah, that's complicated.
It
We've
is.
Looked at that on a couple
yeah.
occasions. We've attempted it.
And that's why we
run the other way.
That's why we're all back. The cease and desist. That's just
Very good. Okay, so that'll, we'll carry that one over.
Okay. So we'll continue that. That'll be, that kind of falls under agenda item six, future agenda items.
Yes.
We'll continue that one to the next meeting with staff reporting back.
And staff can tell you that we did find a sponsor for our licensure by endorsement idea.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, Senator Kavanaugh. So
really?
We're hoping to facilitate licensure for those who are registered and in good standing in other states to come and practice here in the five professions and home inspection as well, as long as the standards are substantially similar to ours. So
can we get that on the Rules and Standards Committee meeting agenda?
This one?
What you just said, if we can get that on the Home Inspectors Rules and Standards Committee meeting
yes.
agenda.
Yes.
All right, so that we can kick that down a little bit.
Well, I reported on it.
I know it.
Yeah. So we still gave the Senator draft language, mm-hmm. and I'm sure they will want to modify it, although the draft language is very similar to what he used to get a very similar piece of legislation through for another board recently. So he's like, oh, that'll be easy. Okay. And he just handed it right to his clerk and said, do this. And we were in there for 15 minutes and that was that. So we're hoping that bodes well.
I think we should call the
aide to make sure we're he hasn't forgotten us. But yeah.
So really, really putting the cart in front of the horse there. Mm. If we achieve this, if this happens, what's the possibility of just having a list for the people that evaluate applications? You know, Alabama's good. If you're registered in Alabama, it's good. That's all I got to see. I don't have to sit there and read.
We wouldn't even ask
we
for
wouldn't
all
even
that. Because all they would need to do is show their license and in good standing and the other stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah. Especially for the professions. Now, geology may be a challenge and home inspections may be a challenge because you guys aren't registered in all 50 states. But if they are and they've tested and they've had appropriate experience, all we need is their simplified application, which we'll have to work on, and verification from the state that they're registered in, that they're in good standing. And then we have the authority in statute for the executive director or the board's designee to just go ahead and grant. So,
well, why would this be difficult for the geology, where not every state has a registration? If you're living in a state that doesn't have one, then you don't have one. So
correct.
Why
then they would
it,
have to apply.
Yeah.
Through the main process.
I thought you're right for states that do. They should be able to call it. Right?
Yeah, and but in, you know, in the 32 states,
and they almost all take the ASBOG, I think, don't
right.
they?
Right,
they
do.
So
they
have the national exam.
Qualify.
So
yeah, and I think with that language in, have requirements similar or greater than Arizona.
Right.
So for any states where there's just like a title act, they
right.
wouldn't qualify.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's okay. pretty exciting. Hopefully, we'll see
yeah.
that go. Through.
You're right. You won't be
good.
Seeing nearly as many out.
Nice.
Well, he will be because they still have to take
oh, the state
specific.
Yeah. Put that in too.
Sorry, forgot about state.
Well, when NCWS can get their act together and take over state specific testing.
Well, I mean, for approval of the state test.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
if,
true.
I mean, if
yeah.
they're good in, you know, whatever
yeah,
X state that meets our requirements, it, yeah, it should be a check mark.
Yep,
so.
You're right.
Yeah.
So that'll be easy. You won't see those.
Nice.
Cool.
I probably won't see this legislation either.
I hope we do see it.
But I mean, just timing-wise, you know.
But Kevin's... No, you were reappointed. You will.
Oh, 3 years from now?
Yeah.
Starting next year?
It would start in August.
Yeah.
If it gets approved this coming session.
July 31st.
Oh, okay.
Cool, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you think would be a topic of interest for a future meeting?
I can't think of anything, but if I do, I'll email you.
Sounds good. Nice.
Wait for the board to tell us.
Yeah.
Right.
Next meeting, I guess we'll just play it by ear.
Okay.
Just like we always do.
Great.
All right.
Thank you.
Stand adjourned. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Rocket to the office now.
It just means I gotta go back to work.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, get the stop on
after a 2-hour drive.